Hey everybody, welcome to a special Fact Attack episode of Forged Narrative. I'm joined tonight by Val Heffelfinger.
Back in black.
Now Val, we're recording on a Saturday. Sorry, is it Friday night?
It's a Friday.
It's a Friday night.
Games Workshop standard time. Still September.
Last business day in September.
That's right. If it wasn't for the last second, man, nothing get done.
Hey, look, we got it.
Hey, you know what? This has been a hilarious, I'm sure for anyone watching or observing that doesn't handle the GW social media streams, it's been a torrent of memes and
meme goldmine.
And hey, they did it. They delivered. So kudos. And boy, did they deliver.
I even posted a sweet one on the FTM page yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
You should check it out. You should like it.
Everyone should check it out and like it, especially those listening or occasionally appear on the show like myself.
We're on the precipice of October. October is going to be a big month for us. We're actually welcoming on a new sponsor for the month of October. We have a couple of guest spots I've already got planned out with some what I consider to be some amazing, innovative Kickstarters that I've already pledged to. That's how much I believe in them. Gonna have some folks on to talk about that, hopefully expose folks. So strap in, October is going to be awesome. But here we are on the last business day of September, as we just mentioned, talking about the FAQ we got. And it's not just for the main rule book, it's for many of the codexes.
And Kill Team.
Yeah, there's been a lot that's changed. In the blink of an eye, some things are different.
Yeah, but not so different.
Well, for the way that I think the majority of people play the game, there's going to be not much difference, except you're going to maybe have a better matchup against some of the other armies that were out there, kind of bending what appears to be the intent of some of the original rules.
Overall, I think I've really liked the measuredness of a lot of these responses. And I know as we get into the nitty-gritty, there's people reacting pretty strongly out there. Of course, this is 40K. We can't change something without,
to be fair, some strong response. Other side, but if you had invested a bunch into a certain way, a certain things did, and then it changes.
Certain Blood Angels army.
Just any, you know, what I know we're going to talk specifically about some Blood Angels eventually. it's almost inevitable.
This is the vampire in the room. I mean, our listeners know, so.
But, yeah, again, and not to play devil's advocate so much, but I can see how some of the things have affected folks.
So without beating around the bush, what are you referring to? What do you think is...
There are two major changes here, and one of them is the way that things like the infiltrate and or forward operatives type stuff works.
Okay.
If you ask me, this is probably one of the biggest thing that's going to really affect someone's army that they've been playing. So with the stuff like the forward operatives, instead of deploying right before the first turn begins, and then being able to take a first turn, you would get what equates to what we would know in the old days as a scout move. So you have to deploy like normal in your deployment zone, and then you can move. Now it's a far move. I think it's 9 inches.
Yep, it's still pregame.
It is. It's a little bit easier to mitigate for your opponent.
Absolutely.
And if you're used to essentially trying to win the flip to go first and being able to really aggressively push into armies that may not have the capability to make all the screens and whatnot, then making it to where you win 63% of your games or whatever. I don't know what the real math is, but this is going to be, in my opinion, a significant change. It changes a lot about how the army would have worked.
Yeah, especially, I mean, those specific builds. I mean, you're thinking Raven Guard, Alpha Legion Cultists, even poor old Admech took it on the chin there. You know, those types of guys that used to have more of a, you know, deep strike before the game kind of mechanic. The humble Eldar Ranger also gets kind of rewritten on this one, too. They instead of being able to be placed anywhere on the table before the first game turn begins. Sorry, I think, yeah, it's before the first game turn begins. They now are just in Deep Strike Reserve, or they're deployed on the table. So that changes the nature of Rangers in a very large way. So, yeah, I mean, that does change those tones. But GW also throws us the bone of a new everybody gets it stratagem, which I think it'd be cool if we saw some more of these, to be honest, but you know, you are able now to pay 2 CP if you go second, and anything that you have that doesn't have the Titanic keyword gets a cover save.
We should have led with that, actually, because there are two significant, almost like game-wide buffs
Yeah.
That, well, the, I just mean, that we got, and this is one of them.
So that is one. And I think that sort of counterbalances, I think a lot of the changes we've seen in both of these FAQs have to do with taking that hard first turn off. So like that it's not, taking that like big time alpha strike out off the table a little bit. Sure, we can still shoot like crazy in turn one, but you know, you're able to hopefully be able to actually move out onto the table, make it about objectives, and have a longer game if you deploy it correctly. And there's still, you know, deep, you're still able to beta strike out of deep strike. So like, it's not like you can't, you know, have really effective ways of coming onto the table and charging what you want to charge. It's just that there's a turn of maneuvering, and potentially that makes for a more interesting game. Certainly, at least for those people who aren't, in the third or fourth year level class of 40K Kung Fu, and know every single ins and out, know how to counter every single type of army list that they face. Maybe they have a chance to actually have a game play out rather than just getting blown off the table.
I follow Magic, the card game Magic, to some extent. I don't play as often as I'd like, but I still kind of follow how they do their ban list, their alterations, their different structures of play. And from what I can tell from my vantage point is that a lot of what they do kind of determines how long they want the game to go. Like if an instance arises where there's too many like third turn kills, or what, and they don't want the format to be that fast, then they make some changes that kind of slows it down. A card, sometimes it's not the actual super powerful card that gets knocked out, it's the enabler for the card. It might be a common card that gets altered or banned or whatever.
Yeah, piece of the combo.
Something like that does it. And so I think what we've seen with this FAQ is something similar, where now instead of making a ton of changes to lots of things, they've just given people the opportunity to burn these command points, which let's be real, you've got 2 free command points anyway from your battalions from 6 months ago. So why not use them on making sure you get to play the game in turn 3?
Yeah. And also, I mean, let's not overstate it too, but you know, as you often say, every time you improve the pip on a dice, you know, improving that save by 1, you know, you've just, you know, added 20% more saves in a lot of cases. Number one big change is that. What else? What else we got?
Well, when I was talking about 2 big buffs to the game, let's talk about Agents of Vect.
Oh, we're talking about a buff to the game? With the Agents of Vect?
A buff to the harsh game with Agents of Vect. Well, okay. Agents of Vect is, now, it's the most powerful stratagem in the game. I think that it should be there. It's awesome. I'm not complaining that it exists or saying that it shouldn't. I think that you do need powerful things in the game because it's like an ecosystem or whatever. You know, things keep other things in check. And objectively, you know, we might be able to identify things as being super powerful. The Agents of Vect is a bit of a fun sponge sometimes.
Yeah, can be.
Because if you're playing an army that relies heavily on one specific stratagem, and there are a few out there, then having someone seeming like that they can just casually blank every trick that you have is oppressive. It's can be a fun sponge. Like, especially if you don't have the rounds in the gun. If your gun only has 1 bullet and they nullify it every turn, then it's going to be a frowny face game. If you have a little bit more depth to your stratagem roster, then it's a different situation altogether. But with Agents of Vect, now there's the big significant change is that you have to have units on the table, and there's been a command point increase.
Yeah. Which, are there? I think it's the only 4-point stratagem. Am I wrong to saying that?
Nope. It's the only one.
Yeah. So there you go. Best strat in the game with the most expensive price tag. I think as far as like anyone who is a fan of Agents of Vect is concerned, they probably maybe were expecting worse, like 1 use only maybe, but effectively having a, you know, it costs 4 command points maybe puts it into that realm if you want to do anything else with your CP, and the Dark Eldar do have lots of awesome strats to be using.
Being a 3 command point stratagem, I thought was fair. It really is a lot. When everyone got more command points, maybe that did make it a little too accessible.
Yeah, especially when you roll that 6 to see if it goes off. Or for that matter, if you have, you know, the warlord trait that they have, and just refund all the CP after you. There were times where you could net out with more CP, and I guess this could almost still happen. You'd net out with more CP after vecting somebody.
Well, the harshest change, if you ask me, is that change the final sentence of the stratagem to read, "The stratagem cannot be used if there are no Cabal of the Black Heart units from your army on the battlefield, and cannot be used to affect stratagems used before the battle or during deployment." So I think I'm pretty sure that we were playing it that way with no before the battle or during deployment type stratagems. But that sentence there, "Cabal the Black Heart units from your army on the battlefield." Now, what this means, if they're in reserves, they can't use it. If you kill them all, they can't use it anymore.
Yeah.
There's a way to stop the insanity.
Any thoughts as to why they maybe went that way instead of just making it a Cabal the Black Heart stratagem?
If I'm guessing here, but I believe the idea is that there was a clear design for commitment here. The Cabal the Black Heart. Specifically, to be able to use it, where you have agents of Vect thematically on the table doing something. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I guess the thing is, though, like it does give opponents the chance to remove it as an option, right? So I guess that is another balancing element. Whereas if it was just a strat unlocked by having those guys in your detachment, or like having a detachment of Cabal of the Black Art, then, you know, even if you kill them all, you can still use it. I don't know if Dark Eldar players or Drukhari players are breathing a sigh of relief or not, but I feel like it's still very much a part of the game. It's not unusable. It definitely, and a lot of these things that they're forcing more of a choice by tightening the economy. They raised, jumping the lead here a bit, but they raised the price on a number of other heavy duty stratagems out there. So I think it's not a bad thing. And also, I mean, with Cabal of the Black Heart, usually the most popular detachment choice for a long time anyway, was an Archon and then three Ravagers. I mean, that's still pretty hardy. You know, that's going to be tough to remove off the table. You know, maybe there's a Nick Nanavadilist at Nova, I guess, where he took just barely anything that was Cabal of the Black Heart to unlock the stratagem. So in that case, you know, it may have been a couple warriors or something that if you took them off the table, then he'd lose it. So that might not be as viable, but you didn't actually see that too often.
I think the fact that it was possible, going back to that whole fun sponge thing, like we can guess about the theme or the intent or whatever. It could easily just be game balance.
Yeah.
And the stratagem command point cost is just a lever they can pull.
Yeah,
and I think that we've seen that they're willing to do it, and that's encouraging as we move forward.
Yeah, and we actually, that is one lever that they haven't pulled yet. They've changed some wordings, but they actually, as far as I know, they haven't changed any, aside from this fact, they hadn't actually gone that far as to change the value of stratagems, which, to be honest with you, I think makes sense in light of the fact that they upped the amount of command points that everyone has access to just strictly by raising the amount that a battalion gives you and a brigade, etc.
No, obviously I was being a little bit tongue-in-cheek by saying that there was a game-wide buff by a change to Agents of Vect.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's good. Like I said, anytime you're forcing someone to actually have to make a choice, because I don't think we've talked either yet at all about just CP farming in general.
Nope.
So CP farming, I think, was easily, I think, leading into this, the top of mind issue that I think a lot of players had is just the fact that there are some builds and armies that could have essentially infinite CP, or at least all the CP they could possibly need through the use of warlord traits and relics to actually regenerate CP over time. They've now made it so that you can only do it once.
It's not even regenerate so much that I think was the problem, is the fact that you could burn one and potentially get back two or three from your single expenditure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. With the stacking as well. Yeah. Like the Blood Angels relic with guard. Yeah. You could actually get
three
amplify
back
your returns. Yeah.
For one. I mean, that's. I mean, I don't believe that was what the intent was, but even let's go even further than that. Let's say that existed in the game right now. Why wouldn't everyone just do that? Like you're just worse if you didn't start every Imperial list with that in mind. And that's not the best way for, you know, imaginative and dynamic games.
And actually, to be honest, I mean, it didn't really become a thing. I think the watershed moment, because that ability has been there the whole time, right? Like, some Blood Angels have been around since the winter. Guard have been around since almost, you know, for at least a year now. What really, I think, swung that was the addition of Imperial Knights, right? So once those guys came on the scene and they were, you know, by design, actually, you know, in the show that we talked about Knights, we were talking about how they're going to be CP hungry, but, well, it's okay. They don't have access to a whole lot of CP. Yeah, like 5 seconds later, everyone was like, oh, wow, well, we can like basically have all the CP we could ever dream of all the time. And they also changed the rules for Knights to give them better CP bonuses, yeah, if they had pure detachment. So there was suddenly a use for all of that beyond just, you know, fueling a really upset Blood Angels captain, which was already starting to be a thing. But once those two scenarios sort of came together, then it became an absolute no-brainer. You had a very good use for what's the like basically low rent, low cost CP that you get from Imperial Guard in with a codex that had a huge thirst for CP, but didn't necessarily have the access to it. So that's, I think, that was that sort of, you know, 1 month it really wasn't that big a deal, and then the next month it was devastating.
Yeah, and but having these kind of controls in place gives them opportunity to use this stuff for other codexes too. I mean, I think this is pretty much setting a firm precedent on how they want the regeneration of command points to go, and it allows them, I think, to maybe use that effect in other ways, maybe for other codexes too. That
sure,
whatever, without it getting too crazy, because the stack, well, anytime you stack rules on things, it gets crazy.
Yeah, and in general, I mean, 8th edition has attempted, and I think even going back further than 8th, but they generally will try and say, no, you can't have stacks on stacks, right? You know, you can't have that sort of infinite power combo. But what's interesting to me is, like, what in sort of the thought experiment leading into this fact of, you know, what can be done to address this issue. There are a lot of ideas bantered around, and a lot of them had to do with, I think, limiting soup soup armies. So, you know, mixed faction armies made up of different detachments. And that didn't come to be. They actually picked what I think is, and they also didn't get rid of CP regeneration entirely. They sort of have a nice little blanket rule that, like, Guard can still get you an extra 6 CP on top of the crazy amount they're going to bring in their brigade or battalion or whatever. So they took it down a notch, but there's still a lot, like, there's still a lot of CP out there in the economy, you know, like, it's there. If you want to do those strats, there's still plenty to spend on them.
I believe so. But, like, playing against an army at the ATC, and the dude, he ran through 30 something command points.
Yeah.
I mean, that's impressive. I mean, he was a cool guy. I mean, this, I'm not even harshing it. It was, I mean, he had some decent rolling.
He's just sweating buckets at the end. It's just like, just drenched. He's so exhausted. It's like, how many CP did I spend?
It was, he
you hit
was
30, man. You
did excellent note taker. I'm talking about excellent. I mean, well, bookkeeper. I mean, cause that's what you have to do. I mean, for both the benefit of yourself and your opponent.
Yeah, absolutely.
I never questioned where it was at. He was very, very clear the whole time. So it was a great person to play against.
But I guess what I was getting
at, he did go through 30 command points.
30 command points. And, you know, to this, you know, tomorrow he could probably still get pretty close to 30 command points if he wanted. And that's what I was saying. Is like, it's actually, to me, kind of a soft touch when you consider a lot of the different ways that they looked at. And I think they actually addressed it through a couple of different ways. It didn't just outright, for example, say, you know, like, we're not going to have as powerful ability to have mixed factions within armies. They just really knocked the power level down on the ability to regenerate stratagems. And they threw other tweaks to other rules. Probably, I think, the biggest tweak myself. I think they've done things to limit not problem units, but very, very powerful units, and a very powerful keyword.
Hit me.
Oh, fly.
Oh, yeah, going to the fly. Fly, this is fairly significant.
This is enormous. And it was funny to me because, it's I guess we were saying pre-show, because, you know, it wasn't really one of the headliners. This is definitely something that they slipped into the pork bill, you know, with everything else that was going through. One change to Fly was actually a change to a previous FAQ, which is they just deleted it, which was that, you know, you have to actually measure the distance when you're, like, vertical distance when you're charging with something with the Fly keyword. Cool, right? So that means that you can't park on top of a ruin and then make a 0-inch charge to something that's next to the ground floor of the ruin. Because Fly, if you go and flip to your rule book, it says that, it ignores train as if it wasn't there whenever the model moves or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. Without any fanfare or noting it in the big fact breakdown, they changed the Fly rule entirely, so that now Fly, the ability to go over terrain as if it isn't there or intervening models, applies only in the movement phase, Paul.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's not terrible.
That is crazy.
It's different, though. It's very different.
So first of all, I'm looking at this from a game mechanic perspective, because a lot of people are losing their minds because, a guy on a jet bike's going to get to the charge phase and get off his jet bike and push it to make his charge. It's like, all right, yeah, cool. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe he's got to swoop in low and he doesn't get the benefit of Fly. I don't care. We can shoot planes with flamethrowers in this game, guys. No one is complaining about that. So the IRL argument for why this is dumb, I just bothers me to no end. This is a completely abstract game. I digress. I think what it does actually is open up a lot of space on a table, because we were talking about, you know, CP and how it wasn't really fully knocked down and nerfed, or at least that's what I was saying. And but now you think of a something like a Smash Captain, which is on a 32 millimeter base, was functionally impossible to screen as a Smash Captain. It was hard to screen units with Fly. Like, so think of all some of the most big bad units out there are, you know, close combat oriented units with the Fly keyword that usually ride a floating bike of some kind, custodes jet bikes.
Demon princes with wings.
Demon princes with wings.
Or just demon princes. I've never seen one without wings.
Which you're allowed to bring 9 of now, are always good. But yeah, what I'm saying is, like, shining spears, custodes with jet bikes, you know, some of the more boogeyman middle table type units. Suddenly, you can actually screen those things out. You can protect yourself from them. The Smash Captain cannot just leap over your line and crush your Riptide's face.
He can't leap over them in the charge phase.
Can't leap over in the charge phase, which means it's probably not going to do it in the first turn. Yeah. You might be able to do it in the second turn, you know, if you thin out those things. So those units basically meant that you didn't have to really deal with chaff. You know, you didn't really have to deal with a lot of different kinds of screening units because you could effectively ignore them. And also, you could hide in combat really easily because you could consolidate over units. You could pile in over units. And you could trap models without the Fly keyword.
Pile them.
Whenever a model moved.
Maybe it was a 3-inch. Yeah, 3-inch move. And that's maybe it didn't come up very often because 3 inches doesn't jump you over much in the world. But
it dozy-dozy around one side of a model, and then you kill a few, and then you consolidate at the end of the fight phase, and suddenly you've got 3 points of contact on at least one base. And yeah, that guy is now trapped in combat, right?
Fair enough.
So now that is not, now that's still possible to do. You can still do that. It's just not as easy. And that means I don't know what that means. Like, the meta will like what good players who aren't me figure out to do with we'll see. But I suspect that opens up a lot more space, not only on the tabletop itself to actually play defense and be able to use the spacing of your models, but it also allows terrain to come into play. You could not hide from a unit of shining spears. Now if you're behind a wall, they can't charge you through it. You know, now you have ways to actually mitigate some, basically, you know, units that could just go across the table with impunity and attack whatever they wanted.
Do you think this is enough to bring Fortresses of Redemption to the table?
Pretty much anything's an excuse for me to bring my gigantic bunker to the table. Come on. How am I blocking on it? It's my favorite. It's got vortex missiles in it, Paul.
As someone who's been shot by those vortex missiles, I understand.
It's the best. Oh, come on. It's my favorite. I kill a strong point, which I was thinking really hard about bringing tomorrow to an RTT. But I don't know, maybe. They also said that that fortifications can hold objectives, which was obvious to me, but hey. No, I think it just it means that Fly is still really good. It just doesn't allow you to ignore.
Well, Fly comes with lots of other benefits too. There's lots of things in the game say this affects you unless you have Fly, or you can do this because you have Fly. Like, it's still good. I think it just puts that little bit more sporting nature in the assault phase.
Yeah.
For them. I think that it's hard to pull off a lot of assault, and you needed some of these things before, so it's going to be really interesting to see how this does shake out and what it does to the overall presence of the limited assault stuff that's in the game right now, or in the tournament scene right now.
Well, I don't know. A bunch of 60 Catechins with was it Strachan? Yeah, yep. They seem to be beating face just fine out there. Hey. You know, I think there's still lots of stuff.
String four, like 4 to 5 attacks a piece or whatever.
Yeah, and they actually went the distance on this one, because for just like they way they changed basically no deep striking in turn one, they went and errated the stratagems like forward operators or whatever. But for this, they went and actually changed the way things like big 3+ invulnerable Necron, the Wraiths, work. So they changed this so that they only move through terrain in the movement phase. Mm-hmm. They changed the way Harlequin flip belts work. So it was actually, you know, as far as I can tell, aside from maybe Grey Knight interceptors, everything sort of got hit in the same way on this one.
Well, I mean, at least they were consistent.
Yeah, that's something. So I'm excited to see. Like, that to me is a pretty big shakeup. And like, where there are units that maybe you would not consider because they don't have Fly, now Fly isn't as omnipotent as it once was.
You were talking about this in the pre-show, again, to bring people into that, was that we could look at two vehicles that were similar points, maybe similar armament or whatever, but one would just be a lot worse because it didn't have Fly.
Yeah, and now maybe not. Now, maybe neither of them get taken now. I don't know. Like, we won't know. We won't know until, you know, people start actually playing it out and seeing what's happening. And there's smart, much more advanced minds than mine on this one. But I think as far as like a very clandestine change, a very quiet change is concerned, this probably has one of the biggest impacts to
the
game.
It does. It opens up so many units too, because previously, you know, previous to today, previous to several hours ago, you lock things down in close combat on turn one or turn two, and then there's just those units that could happen to didn't get taken because that would happen. You had to have X amount of screens. Like, I'm not coming to the table without 60 Catechins or whatever. That's because of this kind of stuff exists. And if you start backing that up to where that doesn't exist, then different things become an option, which is cool.
Yeah.
Now, you know, we will get to a point probably within 6 months before it's, you know, when it gets time for the March FAQ of knowing exactly what to take, because that's what we do. We grab it, we wring it out, we boil it, we distill it down to its highest potency.
Yeah, for sure.
No problems with that.
Yeah. And I think this'll the Etch-a-Sketch has been shook, you know, and now we're all going to start doodling new paths and seeing what actually gets drawn up. But I suspect, like I said, I think it's a cool change.
I guess I've
talked about it.
Well, we're of course hitting some of the highlights. I'm looking forward to building new list and getting some things that I may just have wanted to play with before, but if I had any aspirations of winning the tournament, then it just wasn't possible.
Yeah.
Now that will happen again. I don't have any illusions of us not getting to that point again, but I'm kind of looking forward to taking to some different ideas to come about that goal.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think, I don't know if I've touched on this, but I've seen some criticism about how, soup, you know, like they said, soup still off the menu, you know, like that was in their reveal. And what they meant by that is that detachment soup, which, remember when you could do that, you could have mixed detachment. So detachment soup is off the menu.
Really easy to get warp time on Mortarion then.
Yeah. Right. So that's something that might be off the menu, but army wide, like mixing of factions is still very much a thing. And so there are a lot of, I think there are some folks who are, you know, still floating ideas about how you could change army construction to reduce that, if that's not aesthetically pleasing to you. But you know, even if we were to go that way, you know, then you know, we would go back to the way it used to be, which is you'd have the most powerful books, you know, and you probably have far fewer, you know, potentially good, you know, from a competitive view anyway, builds than you would if you're able to mix factions and abilities and stratagems and things.
Yeah, we're way too far down the path to not have the ally mechanic be in the game.
Well, I mean, I think you don't necessarily have to remove allies, but you can do something like we came up with a comp for a local gaming club here where, you know, only your warlord provides the stratagems and relics and things like that. And that's the only sort of chart you get access to is whatever your warlord is. So there's ways to do it, and you could still bring an ally, but they just don't have all their fancy tricks, right? So, but that reduces.
Well, remember, this rule was a beta rule, and I'm using the air quotes because if they're going to publish, like I think we've proven as a community, if a beta rule gets published, we're pretty much just going to put it into effect.
I don't think that. Well, I mean, they didn't do that this time.
No, I'm saying if they really, because this whole Battle Brothers was a beta rule.
It was, and they firmed it up. For sure. But I mean, there's tactical reserves. They've basically revisited in a big way. Have we talked about tactical reserves?
Nope.
Yeah. Like, so this was one that they're actually taking a second swing at. I guess we've sort of talked around it, but on this one, it's just that you can't deep strike at all in first turn, not even to your own deployment zone.
Just coming in turn two.
You're just coming in.
That's
old
the way it used to be.
Yeah, but you couldn't. People forget this. You couldn't charge though.
No.
So you had to like literally land on the battlefield and just sort of chill, you know, just sort of hang out, and then you could do something, right? Like, so I think it's still very like makes second turn to me kind of interesting. Also, it's an even amount of units and up to half of your total points. So they remove power level as one of the requirements, which I think is much cleaner. And also allows, you know, remove some of the weird stuff that you had to do to tinker with your power level. Like you add one scout to your scout unit, so it's six instead of five, and it doubles its power level, so you can get more into reserves or whatever.
They're on to us, Val. They're on to us.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure you released these, right? Like these aren't just, this isn't just us talking.
I mean, right.
They could tune in theory.
No, that was some dashly tricks. Why is that a 6-man unit of scouts? Well, because...
Because I want to fit this other Grandmaster and a Dreadknight into reserves.
It's the same with like Blood Angels. You could add one extra Sanguinary Guard, and it like takes it to took it like power level 16 or something.
Right. Although you probably wouldn't want that because the Sanguinary Guard you want probably in reserves, right?
Well, right. What I'm saying is there are ways to tweak it.
Yeah.
You could have 30 but also more Death Company out there by just taking that one Sanguinary Guard.
So to me, I think this one forces, again, a nice trade-off because I really liked the fact that they let you deep strike in your own deployment zone because that allowed you to, you know, protect certain things from getting Alpha Struck off the table. So they took that away. They gave you the ability to protect it by making it a little bit more survivable with the 2-point stratagem to give it a better cover save. But now what they're doing is, because a lot of the things that you were hiding in reserves, like say a Shadow Sword or 3 Dark Eldar Ravagers, you know, were coming in and alpha striking you anyway, even though they were just in their deployment zone.
Sure.
So that now you're basically, you know, you're giving up, you know, if a game goes 6 turns, you know, you're giving up whatever 1 turn of 6 turns is worth, 1/6. you know,
of that math.
Of yeah, you, well, yeah, I'll let them other people figure out the math. But you're giving up that you're giving up a whole turn of product production from that model in order to protect it for a turn. So it makes it more of a choice, more of a moment to think. Do I want to risk the unit or do I want to make sure it survives the second turn? I don't know. I think that, again, that to me is more interesting.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with the word interesting. It's going to make for more interesting games. You're going to have more people able to play at a competitive level when this stuff is slowly starts to filter in. I mean, these are huge changes to folks that were using this, to people that didn't or didn't care to want to play that way. These are just going to give them better games.
Yeah, I think so. And it's interesting because I'm seeing with a lot of the chatter, it actually started out as almost euphoria because it's here. And then people started, you know, getting into the weeds and realizing how, you know, it might impact how they play their particular game. So, you know, It's probably a good thing that everyone seems equally sort of grumbly, but also like, fine, you know?
I'm sympathetic.
I think that's good.
You know, we couldn't make it through this episode without talking a little bit about Blood Angels. And, you know, some of this stuff does really impact the Blood Angels.
Who are they again?
They are people that like to assault from Deep Strike as early as possible.
So I think Grey Knights probably, who they didn't even get like an update. Like there's no magenta for Grey Knights. The Grey Knights got absolutely no magenta. They didn't get a single nod, and they not only can't Deep Strike in and Kung Fu fight people anymore, but they also have nerfed Smite. And the one thing they're supposed to fight has the best stratagem you could use against them, known as demons. So yeah, tell me again how Blood Angels have it so bad, Paul.
Let's just say there's a little company down there at the bottom. No, look, I'm a big fan of Dread Knights. Like there's stuff in every army, but that's one of the benefits of if you are like a you like to collect a lot of different things or just play with certain models, or you're attracted to the lore. That's what I think some of these soup armies are awesome for that.
Yeah, they give you some options. But like, okay, like let's talk constructively, because I got to think a good chunk of the listenership likes Blood Angels. What do you think? What are your thoughts on how this affects them? And do you see any way out of it? Any way to give them some hope?
You mean like as far as builds go? Yeah, absolutely. I think that the Primaris Marines really fit in well with the Blood Angels and getting that the cover stratagem.
Yeah.
I mean, that's big. I mean, one of the worst things is you have all these cool units. You've got some aggressors and whatever just kind of hanging out, and then they just get shot turn one. When you are, and sometimes it's not your control. Like maybe you didn't deploy them in cover because there was no cover on your side of the table or whatever. I mean, like there's 100 different reasons why you couldn't, but now you can use that and you're being able to endure with some cool units with a 2+ save, armor save. In this case, you get to play with the toys. So yes, yeah. there's plenty of hope. Having a turn two strategy to where you come down, I think is how Blood Angel players have already comfortably been playing. And so that doesn't change much on that. So you're still going to be able to do everything you were doing with the Death Company before.
Yeah. And also they can also be, they're one of the few units that can still run headlong across the table and beat someone up on the first turn.
Yeah, and Ben Guineas is still powerful. Very powerful.
He's still good.
The thing that got changed was increasing the On Wings of Fire stratagem from 1 to 2 points. And, I mean, let's be honest, it did seem incredibly powerful to do when you take a 25-man unit and do that with it.
Yeah, and now that 25-man unit, if it goes second, it's sitting in the open with a 2+ save.
So Blood Angel's still so plenty. There's plenty of things to do, and you know, combining it, I've been running them with a Knight Valiant. Actually, enjoying how that plays out too.
I enjoy that you play a Knight Valiant.
Well, you know, I've got this idea that, you know, the more points you push up for assault, the better, and that thing's pretty cool. One of the neat things, and very small things in the FAQ, it's specifically relevant to knights. There are three things that are specifically relevant to knights.
It's probably good to touch.
And one of those being the fact that you don't have to fire single-use weapons.
Oh, yeah! Don't you agree, though, that this is one of those things that you kind of hoped that they just would just float above and ignore because it's so stupid?
Well, but see, when you're trying to, like, you take all your Razorbacks with all your Hunter Killers, then they have to fire turn one, or the rest of the tank can't fire. I mean, I don't even know. Okay, being a longtime player, it never even occurred to me that was actually a real sentence in the rulebook that you had to fire everything. Like, I glazed.
Unless otherwise stated, must fire all of its weapons. Yeah.
Yeah. If someone was explaining that to me, I would have told them they were crazy. But now we have an FAQ entry.
Well, I sure hope you're remembering to also fire the pintle mounted storm bolter you forgot you paid for. So
storm bolters,
you
are
have
awesome.
To fire that.
Storm bolters are awesome.
I'm making fun because it really was, I think, a nuance of wording that became a meme at some point in the summertime, yeah. Which was, you know, basically that, you know, you have to fire everything. So, you know, that really impacted storm surges if someone was calling it like that. You know, they'd have to fire all their D weapons. Or one of the favorite troll moves of a lot of people would be, if you get first turn, there's a lot of things that allow you to take over and shoot a model. So you would just take it over and fire off all their one-use weapons.
All the, So dastardly.
So, you know, I think, yeah, it's nice that they just put a pin in it and just said, no, you cannot fire your one-use weapons when you choose a model, obviously. I would have liked a little bit of snark in this one. Sometimes they let a little snark into their FAQs. The snark here would have been nice.
No, duh. You know. Yeah.
Obviously, you don't have to shoot them.
You know, rules is written, as it were. You know, so okay. So the next one is the fact that you don't skip any phases.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's specific to like specifically affects knights, but it's one of those things that you don't. Well, I get okay. This is why I've said it because it leads into this next thing: heroic intervention.
Yeah.
Can you heroically intervene even if no charge was declared by your opponent? Yes.
The answer is yes.
But it leads back to you don't skip any phases. So while you may not actually launch any assaults or try to launch any charges or whatever, the phase of the game still exists.
Yeah. And just don't let yourself get that close to characters.
Those knights, and remember, though, you can just sneak the character knights, rule on them.
If you're playing knights, it's probably a character.
That's
so.
Yeah.
Watch yourself.
That's fair. That's fair. Because you can just sneak the character word on lots of knights.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So for whatever reason, the heroic intervention thing, the first time it happened to me, I was like, what? Show me that. Show me the rule. Show me this. And it was one of those raw, clearly you could do it, but it wasn't necessarily explicit. So, yeah, I think this is a good one for them to have come back and because now when there's that moment of upset in a game where this maybe gets sprung on someone who wasn't aware of that, then now they're no now there's one, now there's something.
No one likes a surprise knight.
No one likes a surprise knight, or just, you know, remember now, it's also within 6 inches of a Space Wolf character. So watch yourself. Watch your space.
That, no, that won't work anymore.
Why?
Because the Space Wolf FAQ.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, this is this is breaking news to me.
If you
I haven't seen it, it's news to me.
If you go to the FAQ, this is one of those things that's probably easy to miss because there's so much content. So you go to the Warhammer Community Facts page, and then you can see the main rule book, and you'll see when each of the fact entries were updated. They have an updated date on there. It is very easy to see that, especially as we go on several months from now. And you may not know if your codex has gotten any attention. But one of the stratagems, Chooser of the Slain, changed the second sentence to read, a single friendly Space Wolves unit within 6 inches of that Rune Priest can immediately shoot at that enemy unit as if it were the shooting phase. But you must subtract one from any hit rolls when it does.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. That one. I was just referring to the fact that they can heroically intervene from 6 inches away.
Oh, my apologies. I thought you were saying that knights are dangerous because the Castellan could...
Oh, that too.
Nuke you after your deep strike.
But you know, there are a lot of, like, in the last 3 weeks or however long it's been since Space Wolves dropped, there were a lot of guys at, like, local tournaments just being like, please, Deep Strike, so I can do this before the fact comes, please.
Yeah. Well, we advocated it, too. I mean, because, I mean, obviously, rules as written were, that's what it didn't say. It just said friendly unit.
Yeah. And there was a glorious moment in early 8th edition where you could run 12 Saint Celestines because she didn't have the unique keyword.
I don't think this was that egregious. It was actually very conceivable that the Rune Priest would direct another unit to fire.
Yes, yes.
But now you can't.
Only if the Castellan had a lot of wolf pelts on it.
Who doesn't
and, like,
model them?
And like some claws.
I paint my knights to after whatever Space Marine chapter I plan to run them with.
That's right. I have a Grey Knight themed Atropos, so that's two of us.
Oh, sorry, I didn't want to sidetrack us. I didn't mean to sidetrack us on the Space Wolf talk. But those were the three things that I think that are really going to directly influence Knight players. And those aren't negatives. Those are like clarifications on you still continuing to beat face with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think overall, I think Knights are, you know, as just still really good. I think that's the thing, is a lot of things are still really good.
Well, the Knights also got an increase on one of their command points for one of their abilities. Actually, I think two of their abilities. So the Oathbreaker guidance system went up to 3 command points.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one that allows you to shoot the Shieldbreaker missile at characters that are not within line of sight.
Yep.
As someone who has shot Yavrain in the face, I'm pretty heartbroken that this is going up to 3 command points.
Well, I mean, now it'll taste that much sweeter because you had to invest so much more. And you only get one CP back for doing it.
Oh, my apologies. Three of them have gone. So the order of companions stratagem has gone up to 3 command points. And our darkest hour has gone up to 3 command points.
What is our darkest hour?
I believe that's the one that lets them come back to life.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's good. That's great. Oh, yes. Thank goodness. I was actually kind of hoping that one would go a bit further, but maybe that's just because...
Like 4 command points, only if you take a Drukhari?
Or, you know, like, if you laugh too hard the first time it comes back to life, you're not allowed to do it again to your poor opponent. Something like that. I had a guy bring it back to life, like, 3 times in one game, and it's just heartbreaking.
Oh, that is a little rough.
Also, it comes back at the end of the phase, so like you kill it once, and then it's just guaranteed to come back. Like you can't.
Not guaranteed. You still got to roll.
Well, no, I mean, so you kill a knight, and then they roll. They run their stratagem. It comes back on a 4+, but it's not back on the table until the phase is done. So you can't shoot it again. You can't be like kill it with fire and like make sure it doesn't get up. It definitely gets to survive that phase. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So our darkest hours was previously a 2 command point stratagem that a model for your army has reduced to 0 wounds but did not explode. That's important too. If it explodes, like there's a lot of rules here that if you misplayed any one of them, it would be kind of really, really bad for your opponent. But if it reduces 0 wounds but did not explode, roll a d6 on a 4+, set the model up at the end of the phase as close as possible to its previous position and more than 1 inch away from any enemies.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it with CP rerolls...
3 remaining wounds, but yeah.
Yeah, with CP rerolls, it was pretty easy to mitigate and give yourself a pretty high percentage to stand them back up. Again, it's not necessarily, like, that's not the go-to one by any means. Like, Tyrannus is not what everyone's running. It's a bit rich when the same knight gets up repeatedly.
Oh, man. I don't know why people would not all be running that. It is so powerful.
I think because you can have a Castellan rerolling once on everything if they're House Raven.
That's the order of the companions went up to 3 command points. That's the one. That's the one that lets you reroll ones for everything.
And how much was it before? It was 2? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's definitely worth 3. I think like anything that's definitely worth 3.
Well, it's damage rolls also.
Yeah, it's like it's what to hit, to wound, and damage. You reroll the ones. All the ones.
Yeah, pretty strong.
It's a pretty strong ball. Pretty strong.
Well, no, we don't have to tell anybody. It's not news that is out there wrecking house.
That's correct. So, yeah, I think one of the things that was surprising to me is, you know, there's some limitation on some of the Imperial Guard abilities to, you know, jack up the saves of Ogryns. I can't remember the specifics.
Well, shield used to say get +2 to your save. So if you had an invulnerable, now it's specifically armor save.
Yeah. So, and also I think demons also lost their ability to go up above a 4+ save using one of their strats.
You take the Cloak of Stars or something, Cloak of something.
Yeah.
It gave you a 2+ invulnerable.
And yet still,
you know, one of those kind of things
with very little investment, AKA not like very little investment, you could still have your Castellan on a 3++ with the Warlord trait and with rotate Iron Shields, which
stuff should be good in the game. It's not about that. It's just when things are outside of either the scope or the balance or the intent.
It's 28 toughness, 8 wounds, man. It's just a lot.
It's a very nice model.
You know, so that one, because I mean, I think that, like, honestly, overall, like, I'm just excited to see how it plays out. Like, it's going to change up what's played and how it's played. And I love that. I understand that it's awkward for some, but anyway, I think it's awesome. Overall, I think that the tenor of the changes have been subtle enough and not massive ham-fisted moves. There seem to be corresponding changes. So when one thing was changed here, they seem to have anticipated it with changes in other areas of the rules. But Castellan on a 3++, hanging out with Imperial Guardsmen, is still a nightmare.
This FAQ, though, seems to be kind of designed to having a better play experience for more amount of players.
I wholeheartedly agree. Another thing that got through that without any real adjustment that surprised me was Yennari.
Yeah.
That surprised me.
You don't think that the fly change is...
Yeah, that'll mess up Shining Spears and what they can do. So hopefully now there's a corresponding. I hope that factors in and they don't get double whacked, you know, with a big points increase. But Yeah, I'm still surprised. Like, there's I've been privileged enough to be able to see some cool data that's been crunched off of tournaments, and Yanari just in general have a crazy win percentage. So
it's a stacking rules. Anytime you stack rules, then you're creating a real... It's a weird thing. Now, not that it shouldn't be possible ever, but you have to be very careful when you're doing it, in my opinion. And I think that having it the way that they... it was a little kind of... The floodgates were open with the Yanari originally, but the first errata to them, I think, brought it down to a much more manageable level.
Well, and put in frame of reference, the numbers I was reading, and these would be all the GTs probably from, like, I don't know, would be late July into Nova. Yanari were winning at like a 70% clip. So that, you know, they were definitely, they weren't winning the tournaments necessarily. They were getting countered in other spots, but that means they are beating the hell out of all kinds of people, you know, and maybe not having the nicest play experience. So they may not be winning the tournaments, but they're winning a lot of games. So that in itself is maybe a, you know, just something to be looked at, maybe look at having guys be able to activate more than once all the time. You know, I don't know, check into it or something.
You just need to bring Shieldbreaker missiles and shoot your Rain in the face.
Sure. Yeah. But then Shining Spears next to your Soul Burst and go to your house and eat all your snacks.
That's the beauty of the Valiant. That 36 auto hit.
Oh, yes. I mean, I love the idea of the Valiant. And honestly, I do. I really love the idea of a giant idiot stomping around with a harpoon for an arm.
He's the one model Yanari counter.
You know, like, it's pretty cool. At the same time, he's not a Castellan. I think that's really what he suffers from. You know, he suffers from Nauticastellan disease. And I think, you know, getting back to something we were talking about earlier, that's what's interesting is, like, right now there's all these units with fly that are prevalent that are being taken because the units that might be taken are not those units. And now that unit is different. So what changes? You know, like, so what do we see? What do we see get taken instead?
Yeah, it'd be cool. We'll try to, for next week's show, this is this week. I guess this would be this week's show since I wasn't able to record this week. So this might just be this week's show. But for next week's show, we'll have a lot more time to have digested what the real impact of the changes were and maybe see how lists got affected.
It will be interesting. And, you know, there's not a tremendous amount of, like, marquee events between now and the LVO. And there's going to be a massive shift, I'm sure, when Chapter Approved drops. So it'll be interesting to see what this little segment of the 40K experience brings to us.
Do you think we hit the most of the highlights? What did we miss here? Is there anything else you'd like to chat about before we wrap this up?
I think we are probably petering out to the point where we could maybe bring this one home. I've even said my thoughts. Overall, I think I'm pretty excited for it. There's one massive change to Tau. No, I'm kidding. There's a minor change to Tau. You can't pass out. You can only pass off melee and shooting attacks to drones. This has caused some consternation out there. I honestly was so confused about how Smite interacted with Savior protocols that I just never bothered even trying to do it. So this one I dodged because I was just afraid to try and interpret those rules. Is it one wound? Is it all D3? I don't know. It's none of it.
Well, because what does it say in the FAQ?
In the FAQ, it just says that they define an attack as shooting or melee. And that's what, so Savior protocols is something to the effect of whenever an infantry or battle suit within 3 inches is the target of an attack or a wound or whatever, you may pass it off on a 2+, yada, yada. Yeah. So now they say that that means melee or shooting. It does not mean psychic or, you know, whatever other ways you can hurt people in this game.
Yeah, and I think that's a pretty good clarification. And I know it says in the FAQ that in this instance, like, that this is what it is. So maybe doesn't rule it out for things for others, but at least we know how that works.
Yeah, absolutely.
There is another small thing here for the purposes of strategic discipline. This is the rule for match play that says you can only use a stratagem once per phase. It goes on to clarify that ones with the same name, like Veterans of the Long War for Chaos Space Marines, if you used it for a Chaos Space Marine detachment, you couldn't then go on to use it for a Death Guard and then Thousand Sons or whatever if this comes up further.
Yeah, because they all have a stratagem that's the same name
exact
different books.
Name. Yeah.
So that's that one I find interesting because that one never even occurred to me. So like,
well, they
somewhere
wouldn't stack because they say, you know, this is for Death Guard units or whatever, but it prevents you from using it. So for instance, if you've got, you know, the Chaos Space Marine detachment to get the warp time to put on Mortarion, and then you couldn't Long War on your Pox Walkers and then turn around and do it on your Possessed. Not that you would have any Possessed in the army,
but it's just interesting, like that's one that I would have thought I'd see people arguing about, or at least like gnashing their teeth a bit more. I've honestly, until I read that FAQ, it never occurred to me to do that, because the flip side to that, ironically, was, you know, can I take a Demon Prince from Chaos Space Marines and from Thousand Suns and from, you know, whoever else can take them, Death Guard, and get to like 9 Demon Princes, because they're all the same data slate. They're all just Demon Princes. And the answer was yes, you totally can do that. So I guess you have same, but different there, guys.
And you should do it, because Demon Princes are awesome.
Exceptions prove the rule, especially in 40K, Paul.
It's a lot of moving parts in 40K, man.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, this is well beyond, I used to call it a college night course. This is getting to some 100 level stuff. this is first year in your country college here.
Dude.
This is some freshman studies.
Well, thanks for coming on and chatting with me. This is an emergency episode. Had time to process this. Next week, we'll be talking about the impact on list and, of course, continuing to get feedback from folks out there talking about the changes. I'd love to hear how this impacts people's own list and what they expect to see and what they expect to fight against. And if anybody gets to put these rules into action between now and the time we record next week, I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah. And tomorrow, I'm going to go play in a RTT. And they tried to not use it. Some of us were very vocal saying we should totally use the FAQ. So I'll have some firsthand reporting. I'm going to go the other way, Paul. I'm not going to try and use it to my advantage. I'm going to just play the lowest model count orc army I could possibly come up with.
Good luck, man. Let us know how it goes.
I will. All
right, we'll see you.
Have a good one. Thanks for having me.
In the reflexes.